Here's Higdon, it sits up nicely for Michael Higdon! And what a start for Motherwell! But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Sutton! Magnificent Malt! Stephen Robinson celebrates! Motherwell, 2-1! Could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr and Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MSC podcast. Tonight, myself, Andy, Scott and Gordy will look back on Saturday's 1-0 victory over St Johnston. We'll look ahead to Thursday night's Europa League tie with Kilrain. We'll also be joined by a Kilrain supporter to give us a wee bit of an insight on our Northern Irish opponents. We'll look ahead to Sunday's game against Aberdeen in the Scottish Premiership. And that should be about us for the next 45 minutes or so. Guys, welcome along.
Thanks for having us, Andy, again.
Evening.
Cheers.
Gordy, I'll start with yourself. Finally, we can record a podcast on the back of 3 points in the Premiership. It wasn't a pretty victory. Games against St Johnston rarely are the easiest on the eye. But I think going into the game, it was absolutely pivotal. We picked up the 3 points. And for Stephen Robinson, I guess it's job done. A fantastic goal by Alan Campbell in the first half. Sealed the game. After that, there was a few close escapes. Not a great deal of action for the St Johnston goalkeeper. But in the end, after 10 minutes of injury time, the most important thing was the scoreline.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it was job done. You know, probably it wasn't our best performance this season. There's games where we haven't won or we've even lost this season. We've maybe actually played better than we did on Saturday. But the most important thing after the start that we've made is to get the 3 points. I thought we actually started the game quite well. Obviously got off to a flyer with a goal from Alan Campbell. But obviously as the game sort of wore on, we didn't really create a great deal. And St Johnston had a fair bit of the ball and created one or two chances themselves. Some of them were maybe gifted to them, I guess, from mistakes by us, but we held on. You know, it was the most important thing was to get 3 points over the line and get ourselves sort of off the mark for the season. And yeah, as you said, games against St Johnston are very rarely a classic anyway, but we do have a history of dropping points to them, particularly at home in sort of previous seasons. So a good game to get the first 3 points this season. I think it was obviously badly needed.
And Andy, I mentioned a few close escapes. I think it would be wrong for me not to mention the fact that defensively, while we kept a clean sheet, there was a few real heart and mouth moments. Two in particular from Ricky Lamy, which I would have to kind of say that it looked like a bit of a lack of concentration in both occasions, where he's just taking his eye off the ball, or in the case of the pass back, really had a bit of a brain freeze, really, and suddenly it can be so costly. These errors need to be eradicated. They're very, very basic, and at the top level, you are going to be punished. On Saturday, we were lucky in the fact that it didn't happen, but we quite as easily could be sitting here discussing the fact that, yet again, we had lost the game kind of through our own fault.
Yeah, it's something we definitely need to try and eradicate. Perhaps it's something we need to see once things settle down over a kind of longer period, once we finally determine what formation that we're going to use primarily and where people are going to play. I mean, I read it said that Lamy, in the grand scheme of things, may find himself once Carroll comes back, that McGinley may be a kind of an option in central defence. I don't know, to be perfectly honest. But we need to kind of see how things settle down in terms of terms of the kind of formation and the players within that. But certainly you're right. I mean, there's a kind of growing list of instances where we've given away daft penalties, players have been left unmarked, or we've kind of gifted opportunities to the opposition. I suppose in one sense, it's kind of, it's good that you're not being routinely carved open by other players from the opposition, but the same manner of means, you can't keep gifting chances to the opposition. So it is certainly something that we need to tighten up on. On Ricky Lamy, he would appear to have been, I wouldn't say like for like, but in terms of replacing Peter Hartley, but you're talking about someone that's had a good couple of seasons of top flight experience, you know, moving on from the club, being replaced by someone who had a good couple of seasons of top flight experience. So you're looking for, as I say, not quite like for like, but well, you're looking for some sort of similarity there, a bit of experience, and you know, a couple of wee edgy things there so far. But the main thing is, I would say, these are things that can be eradicated or worked on, or not routinely being carved open, which is the positive in that regard, I would say.
Pepe, I maybe was wrong in starting with a more negative side of the performance there when there was a glaring positive of Alan Campbell's performance yet again. I think in the first 45 minutes, he was head and shoulders above anything on the park. And the highlight of that, obviously, was his brilliantly taken goal. Now our top goal scorer in the league. But he's the heartbeat of everything good that we do. His work rate has never been questioned. I know that it's the kind of cliche almost that he's a poster boy of the academy, his first one in the gym, last one out, but all these elements to his attitude towards his game are demonstrated in every time that he pulls on a Motherwell jersey. His work rate is absolutely fantastic. He really puts himself on the line for the cause.
I just think he's it's again cliche, but he is the kind of model professional. He's the type of player that when I take my wee boy to the game, that you would want him to emulate. You know, he's just everything about him. He's come through the youth setup at the club, and he's now, I mean, even when he's on the pitch, he's quite a quiet guy off the pitch at times that I've spoke to him, but on that pitch, he's just unbelievable. And his performances this season's pulled the performances through. It's actually got to the stage where he's playing and you wonder who was the better player, him or Turnbull. Now that he's adding, getting a couple of goals into his game, I think that's maybe one thing that was missing from him, but he seems to have got a wee bit of confidence. And it's always great when one of your players gets a start. It doesn't matter if it's under 21s, but to score the only goal in a game, for me, was great. But I mean, he's finished for there, and the way that he wins the ball and has the confidence to drive on, that's exactly what you want from your midfielder. And I seen somebody in Twitter had said that they're going to tweet Motherwell every day until he signs a new contract. And I hope there's not too many tweets, because he's just, I just can't see how a bigger club will only come in and want to take, not even a chance on him, but get a bargain, because he's just by far head and shoulders above anybody that's put the shirt on this season. I think that's plain to see. It's maybe a bit unfair on Trevor Carson, but I can't speak any higher about Alan Campbell this season. He's just been outstanding, and his attitude to match it is just great to watch.
Gordy, that has to be a concern, doesn't it? That his contract is up at the end of this season. The performances in the early parts, he certainly has been the standout. And when you do remove a kind of a more flashy player in David Turnbull from the setup, maybe the focus is going to shift on to Alan Campbell scoring the winning goal for the 21s in the midweek, and then scoring the winning goal for your club side on the Saturday. It's certainly is a weekend, or a week, sorry, that will have have really thrown him into the spotlight and prominence. And I think it has been noticeable in maybe the last kind of 5 or 6 weeks that Alan Campbell has got that bit more focus. When, and I think we were quite grateful for the fact that he used to fly somewhat under the radar.
Yeah, I mean, he has been obviously, as we all know, a constant sort of consistent performer right throughout the Stephen Robinson era, if you like, at Motherwell, the last sort of 3 or 4 seasons. I think you probably touched on it quite well there. I think there's a couple of things that maybe all coming to the boil and making maybe Alan get a little bit more publicity than he has done previously. I think in the last, including last season, he started to add more goals to his game, which will always get you more recognition, as well as obviously the sort of hard work and industry that he brings to the midfield that we all know about. As you say as well, the fact that he got a goal midweek for Scotland under-21s is again only going to bring him more to people's attention. And obviously with his contract running out at the end of this season, there will be without a shadow of a doubt clubs probably both north and south of the border, if not beyond, having a look at him as well in the hope that they can get him on a slightly reduced figure than maybe they could have gotten for last season. But hopefully something will get sorted out one way or another. Ideally, if we could keep him for another year or so, that'd be great. But, you know, if Alan was to take this opportunity while his stock's maybe at its highest to move on, I don't think anyone at the club could begrudge him. You know, he's probably got, what, about 150-odd games under his belt for the club and has been, despite only being 21 or 22, whatever age he is now, but he's been such a consistent performer for us for the last 3 or 4 seasons that whatever he does now, you know, as a Motherwell fan, I couldn't begrudge him whatever he decides to do.
See, the one thing that I would add to what I'd say is, obviously, Turnbull's been and gone now. He's a Celtic player. But for me, it would probably make more sense Celtic if I'm trying to sign to Alan Campbell, because for me, it looks like a kind of ready-made replacement for Scott Brown. I'm not touting him to go there. That would be horrendous if he went to and lost him to the Old Firm again. But for me, I'm not saying Turnbull's not going to be a success, but I think it's going to be harder for David Turnbull, because he has, as you said, Andy, he's more of the flair, whereas Campbell digs deep. He's more of that kind of ball-winning, be hard man, almost kind of a la Scott Brown. That's the kind of player that I see him as.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I don't think any of us like the scenario of another potential loss to Celtic or Rangers or any other Scottish club for that matter. I saw Gav that does the Hibs podcast mentioning that Campbell was the best player in the park when the two sides met at the end of August, and he was contemplating how much it would take for Hibs to take Alan Campbell off our hands. And again, it's kind of hard to see where his level is, if you know what I mean. I think sometimes you can say, oh well, he'll go down to the English Championship and be a real standout, but there's so many talented players that have went to that level of the game and almost get lost in the sea of players. Teams operate with such big squads. It could work the other way, of course. It could be a kind of, for example, a John McGinn type situation where he just absolutely flourished. And I think that in the time that's passed since John McGinn joined Aston Villa in the Championship, the way that he's developed and clearly his attitude to the game has massively helped in his rise to prominence and helped him hold his own. So it could be very interesting to see what happens next.
Look at James McArthur, though. Look at the career that he's managed to get for himself. Now, I don't think any of us would have, when he left Hamilton, would have thought that he would have got the career. And I mean, I was reading a couple of weeks ago that he's a kind of a fan's favourite at Crystal Palace. I think Alan Campbell would, and I'm not saying he would stroll into the Crystal Palace team, but I certainly think that he's far. Going to Hibs is definitely a sideward step. Do you know what I mean? I think he's got to be looking at a kind of a top-lane Championship side or a team like Sheffield United, somebody like that. I generally think that's the level that he would play. We need to pitch him at.
Andy, what about the contract situation? Do you feel that this is maybe one that is going to be taken out of our hands, or does it? Is this maybe something that Motherwell can do? Should there be the boost of European revenue and maybe go all out to protect our asset and benefit further down the line?
I wouldn't say we go all out. The minute you have contracts for an individual or a couple of players in the team that are massively different to the rest, I would imagine that's a slippery slope that you then go on. I think we have to remember the model that they're operating under, and well, we have made a good amount of money on the players. We're hopefully going to make a good return in Europe. There's still a lot of things that we need to pay for at the club. Now, the balancing act of that, obviously, is you need to ensure that you're investing sufficient funds into the squad, that you're not going to get embroiled in a relegation battle or take the drop. But I think there'll be an appropriate level that they'll work towards and try and encourage Alan to re-sign. Perhaps there'll be some sort of agreements in there, as has been done in the past with players. If a particular bid comes in of a certain amount, if a particular bid comes in from a particular level of a club, these kind of things, that it may trigger a kind of a release there. But it doesn't seem to be the kind of character that is just going to kind of leave the club in jeopardy in terms of his situation. There is, of course, the fact that he's under 24, so there's going to be an element of compensation would come into play if the worst were to happen. So it wouldn't be the case that he's going to walk out the door and we don't get anything. But I'm sure there'll be some sort of compromise in there in terms of a contract. If not, then he's surely going to go, whether it's a case of before the kind of end of the summer transfer window or come the kind of winter window.
Hey, how does the offer of free beer sound to you? Yes, free beer. Thanks to our friends at beer52.com, you have the opportunity to sip 8 free exclusive craft beers from around the world. All you need to do is go to beer52.com/MFC, pay the postage, and what's more, you'll get 2 extra free beers, so that's a total of 10 free beers. beer52.com/MFC.
Let's look ahead to Thursday night. Now, I guess the last couple of weeks, well, we've got that result against Celtic sandwiched in between. The victory over Glentoran was emphatic. We've got our first 3 points on the board in the league, and now I think we can go into Thursday night, Pepe, on a certainly on a higher note than we would have been going into the Glentoran game, for example, after losing to Hamilton in the Saturday before it, and everything seemed a bit doom and gloom, and you really kind of felt that it could be a bit of a disaster, and I think we all kind of admitted we weren't really feeling that buzz about the game. For me, this one seems a bit different. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a really exciting opportunity to progress into the next round and see where it takes us. I know that both sides that lie in wait in the third qualifying round are an unknown, really, but should you get there and get that one-off opportunity to reach the playoffs, then who knows what happens and who knows what kind of side you could be paired with. The names are certainly exciting. So it's another European tie. Yes, there's not going to be any supporters there, but it does feel that there should be a buzz about this game.
It certainly does, doesn't it? I mean, I fully expect that we'll go out and win it. Maybe not just as convincingly, but if we don't win it, then there is certainly questions need to be asked, and it's back to panic stations. And it is good coming off a victory, albeit, as we've already discussed, it maybe wasn't the greatest performance that we've ever had. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the draw that we'd all have picked, and I really think it'll be kind of we'll win it easy, and I'm again hoping that it's, I said it the last time, another kind of confidence booster, and it's maybe not kicked on as much because our strikers in the league still haven't performed that well. But hopefully they'll get a couple of goals to kickstart their season now that we're off the sort of we get the victory against St Johnstone.
I think the danger is if we concede first. Going by the kind of way their games have went, they look as if they can be certainly quite stuffy, quite well organised. And if we were to go behind, then the evidence thus far of the season doesn't really fill you with massive hope that we've got the nous there to kind of break down teams that sit back in and just park the bus on us. So the hope would be that we get the first goal, and a little as I think we tried to do to a certain extent on Saturday, is that in the knowledge that you're ahead and the opposition has to come out and you can look to then kind of take advantage of them pushing on. We never quite managed to achieve it, but ultimately that would be the kind of hope that you would do, and thereby with them pushing forward, we can use our kind of pace and, you know, the kind of ability that we do have in the team to carve out an opportunity too that, you know, could extend that lead if we do happen to get in front.
That's totally different, though, isn't it? The fact that it's just a one-off game. But obviously, if you look back to when we played Clonethley, when we played them at Airdrie, and we could clearly see that we weren't fit, and they came out and beat us. And then we went down there. I mean, we knew it was a must win, so we upped our game. So if you have that off night, then you just never know what can happen. So we need to... We know that we'll be a big scout for them, so we need to start the game the way that with the intentions... This isn't just us winning the game because it's a part-time team we're playing. Because, I mean, that's another important factor. It's like a real part-time team. They've not really started their season. So everything is for us. And that's something that usually, in the Motherwell way, everything's for us, yet we still manage to mess it up.
Gordy, what about the fact that we go into this game having already beaten Northern Irish opposition? Does that offer a risk of complacency, or do you believe that it is the case that Stephen Robinson has been very adamant that these are teams that you have to respect and give the proper attention to if you're going to be successful? Because you look at Kilrain and how they progressed into this round by beating Maribor, a real surprise result. We could end up with egg in our faces here.
Yeah, I think... Obviously, as you say, with Stephen Robinson's knowledge of the Northern Irish League, as well as their own experiences in the last round against Glentoran, that we would be guarded against complacency. As much as the scoreline was fairly convincing against Glentoran a few weeks ago, you know, for the first hour or so, it was a very tight game, and you know, they had a few chances at 0-0. And really, it was them going down to 10 men that turned the game in our favour and were able to take full advantage. And obviously, as the game wore on, with them being I think they were a part-time side, but certainly without, even with a lack of match sharpness or a lack of match fitness on their side, we could sort of steamroll them in the last 20 minutes or so. I think we might have done that even if they had 11 men. So I think, you know, obviously the fact that they beat Maribor in the last round tells you all you need to know, that Kilrain are obviously no mugs, and I think it will be a hard-fought game. Hopefully, over the course, you know, as Andy alluded, you know, not conceding early or not conceding at all was obviously would stand us in good stead. I think as the game wears on, again, into the later stages, hopefully we might have that wee bit edge in terms of fitness that could tip it in our favour. But I don't think by any stretch it'll be an easy game.
I'm delighted to welcome along from sunny Spain. He's actually complained about how warm it is. It's certainly not something that we're experiencing while recording this podcast. Kilrain supporter, Kilrain author, Andrew Gillan. Andrew, thank you first and foremost for coming on tonight.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
But in regards to Thursday's Europa League qualifying match, Kilrain reached the second round with a, a fantastic victory over Maribor. How big a victory was that, and how big was it for Northern Irish football as well?
Well, for Coleraine, I mean, you have to go back, well, discounting the Intertoto Cup, you have to go back to 1970 for the last time Coleraine passed through the first round of a European competition, when it was a victory against a Scottish team, a very famous 3-2 win away to Kilmarnock in 1970. And I would probably say that the Maribor result is the biggest in the history of the club, and probably, without a doubt, the most financially lucrative as well, given the amount of money that's at play in Europe, in European competition these days. And it's just the fact that the Maribor game, it was one of those things where we were drawn away, nobody gave us a chance. I didn't really give us much of a chance. I thought, just, okay, here we go to play this, a very good team who were in the Champions League 2 or 3 years before that, and I think actually drew with Sevilla in their own stadium there in Slovenia, and just dug in. They maybe underestimated us a bit. I'm sure they did, because they left a couple of their better players on the bench, but they brought them all on and later on in the game, and they sure knew they were in a game by that stage. And then obviously it goes to penalties. It's always a bit of a lottery, as they say, but we'd been in a penalty shootout earlier in the summer in the Irish Cup. It was an absolute nightmare for us. I think only scored one out of four kicks, but then all the players who took in Slovenia, perfect. And they got theirs. They hit the post with theirs. We have the chance to score and go through, and we did it. For Coleraine, it's a huge result. For Northern Irish football as well, the UEFA coefficient had been dreadful for a few years. The fact that that we had to play a preliminary round shows that for a few years Irish league clubs hadn't really progressed in Europe at all. Usually, I'm sure you know yourself, because a lot of Scottish clubs have had the same situation. You come back at the end of June. You haven't started yet. If you're not seeded, 9 times out of 10, you get drawn against a Scandinavian team who are in the middle of their season. And it's extremely difficult, especially when you consider Northern Irish clubs are part-time. We had that situation in 2017 when we qualified for the first time in 14 years. We were drawn away to Haugesund from Norway. And because of the way the draw was and the timing, it turned out that our goalkeeper at the time couldn't travel because he had exams. He had university exams he needed to take, and got beaten the away leg pretty severely, although did draw 0-0 in the return leg at home to save a bit of face.
It's certainly a bit of a strange dynamic from a Mudo point of view, having already faced Northern Irish opposition in the previous round,
mm-hmm.
and having at the helm Stephen Robinson, who is a pretty well-known face in amongst the Northern Irish football scene, I would imagine, given his role previously with the national team.
Yeah.
Does that give Coleraine a wee bit of more of an insight into Motherwell as well? And perhaps Motherwell won't be the unknown quantity that they may have been had Stephen Robinson not been the manager and Motherwell hadn't faced Glentoran in the previous round?
Well, I suppose it makes a difference that there is that evidence from the game against Glentoran. I mean, I remember Oran saying before the preliminary round when we played La Fiorita from San Marino, the only footage that we could find of them was when they played Linfield 2 or 3 years ago in the Champions League. And I think only 2 or 3 of their players were still there from that team at the time. So it definitely makes that a little bit easier. Motherwell are a team that I know lots of the players are SPL fans, and they will watch Scottish football week in, week out. So there are players that are familiar. So, and of course, Oren obviously has his experience in Scottish football as well. So, well, I won't say it gives a massive insight to it. It's a little bit less of a trip into the unknown, considering some of the teams we could have drawn at this stage.
And despite finishing third in the Premiership last season, it's been a shaky start to say the least for Motherwell. It took until Saturday there to pick up the first 3 points of the season. What is the mood been amongst the Kilrain supporters, and what's the mindset going into this game? I think it's fair to say that Kilrain will be considered underdogs, but I'm sure there will be a few that are really fancying their chances.
Well, yeah, undoubtedly we are massive underdogs for this, because Motherwell, well, are a full-time team. You have the massive advantage that your league is already, what, 6 or 7 games in, whereas aside from the European games and, well, the Irish Cup games that we played seem like a lifetime ago back at the end of July, it's just been friendlies here and there for us since then. But as you know, it's a one-off game. No one expected us to get anything against Maribor. It's anything's possible, really. Yeah, it's there. It's there to be got. It's a prize that's there to be got, because the over two legs in Europe, the smaller team very rarely wins. I know for a fact that Maribor, if we had drawn that game 1-1, they would have said, we got away with one there, lads. Right, second leg, full strength team, get the game over as quickly as possible. But the fact it was a one-off game meant that we had the chance to take it to penalties and go through. So you never know. It's one that I'll be rushing back home from work to watch it on the BBC live feed. It'll be the afternoon will go quite slowly, I'm sure, because this is, as I say, this is unknown territory for Kilrain. Kilrain, the furthest we've ever got is the second round of a European competition, never to the third stage. So,
Andrew, do you mind me just asking what as a Motherwell fan, I guess, can we sort of expect from Kilrain in terms of their style of play? You know, what should we sort of be looking out for on Thursday?
So I suppose normally we would play either like a traditional 4-4-2 or a 4-3-3. Probably the 4-3-3 is a bit more likely in a European game, because obviously big underdogs and you're not wanting to open up too much. The sort of fairly direct, but there are a lot of good footballers in the team as well. People that we like getting the ball on the ground and running at you, particularly from the wingers. And then we have James McLaughlin up front, who's been the undoubted star of the European run so far, with the two goals and the two rounds. So he's the kind of player that he just needs one chance and he'll bury it. So
what do you know about Motherwell? What kind of players will you be looking out for? Have you done much research or watched much of us? And who do you think is your danger man?
Well, I can't really say I've watched a great deal, because I kind of find the whole football behind closed doors thing a little bit off-putting. I mean, La Liga started up here at the weekend. Again, I didn't watch a single match live, because it's just strange. So, I know obviously Stephen Robinson's the manager. Liam Donnelly, a Northern Ireland player, but he's out injured. Shame, he's someone that's come through the Northern Ireland underage teams, and because he started off in Northern Ireland playing for Dungannon when he was very, very young, I think 15 or 16, before he went to Fulham. He's someone that I've kept an eye on as he's gone up through the ranks. And I did say Tony Watts, his most famous goal was against Barcelona that time that he played for Celtic, but
yeah, he doesn't tend to mention that one very much.
I wonder why. Well, maybe for him, scoring against Cole Rain would be an equally great achievement.
We heard a wee bit about in the lead up to the Glentoran game about the strides that the Glentoran were making, how they had kind of transformed. There's also been quite a lot of coverage about Linfield improving as well over the last couple of seasons, and the league as a whole seems to be generally on the up in Northern Ireland, kind of redevelopment of Windsor Park as well, and attracting kind of sponsorship and stuff that was a bit more difficult to come by previous years. Everything seems to be on a kind of an upward curve. Where do kind of Coleraine fit into that in terms of the size of club in terms of Northern Ireland, and where would you think, what would be about the kind of benchmark as to where they would fit in a kind of Scottish context?
I think Coleraine, in terms of the, you're looking at the terms of the teams that are outside of the big cities but are occasionally one of the more successful provincial teams. I mean, we've won the league once in 1974 and then won the Irish Cup six times, and then last year we had a fairly successful season before the pandemic shut everything down. We were second in the league, I think 5 points off the top maybe, whenever everything shut down, and we'd already won the League Cup. So in terms of, I can't really think of an exact Scottish equivalent, but definitely one of the larger clubs outside the top. Linfield and Glentoran are the two biggest and most supported clubs, but Coleraine are definitely like in the conversation below that. There has been a lot of investment in the league recently. Glentoran have got overseas investments. The guy that owns the Purple Bricks estate agency has invested a lot of money in his hometown team, Larne, and they're looking at going full time. And Coleraine, we don't really have the same amount of outside investment that the other teams would have. So getting through several rounds in Europe is massive. It's massive for Coleraine, because getting through two or three rounds, the amount of money that could come in, it could pay for a lot of ground improvements. It could set the club up for a couple of years on a stable footing, because we are only 15 years after the club looked like it was going out of business. So I think I certainly just thank our lucky stars that we're still around.
And just finally, Andrew, on the manager, he has obviously had relative success in keeping St Mirren in the top flight before departing, returning back to Northern Ireland. How much of an impact has Oran Kearney made at Coleraine?
Yeah, well, Oran was, whenever Oran first took over Coleraine in, like, I think it was February 2011, I was working for the club at that time doing media stuff. And I remember just being sent his phone number and said, here you go, you need to interview the new manager. And I think I had half an hour with him that evening, and I was completely sold on the fact this was the man that was going to turn Coleraine around and make us a successful force again. He's a people person, or, and he works in a school. He's very good with motivating people. He's helped a lot of players develop in the last few years, especially young ones. We've had some players come through the club and go off to England and Scotland. Came in, I say, initially in 2011, good amount of success relative to where we had been before. It tailed off a little bit because we needed to make budget cuts, and there were a few years whenever things were a little leaner, but he used that time well, sort of recruiting players from the lower leagues, like James McLaughlin that I mentioned before, and bringing through a few younger players into the team, like Lyndon Kane, the right back, who'll most likely be playing on Thursday. I think he made his debut as a 16-year-old or 16 or 17 and has been in the team ever since. So, and then whenever it was kind of ironic that we just had our best season in years when we finished second and won the Irish Cup, and then Oran left and things just seemed to drift a little bit. They had the same players mostly, but just didn't seem the same without him there. But, and then when he came back, a lot of people written Coleraine off last season and said the team wasn't good enough. The squad was only really good enough to maybe wouldn't even make the top six. But as I said earlier on, we were second before the shutdown. We won a trophy. I'd say he's done a pretty good job. And I sort of worry that this European run will draw a bit of spotlight to him again, and there might be some more attention from clubs over in Scotland or England. So, but I think the idea is we'll make the most of having him in charge while we still can.
And just finally, can you give us a quick prediction for how the game's going to go on Thursday night?
Oh, I don't like making predictions. I usually predict that we'll lose, and then I'm happy because I was proved wrong. So I don't know. I'd say maybe a draw, and might nick it on penalties again. Who knows?
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for your time tonight. It's been very insightful. I wish you all the best, but not too much luck on Thursday, it must be said. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Pleasure. And then following that, we move on to, or back onto league action against Aberdeen at Pittodrie. That's followed by a home game against Rangers in the league. And these are two very difficult games back to back. And you get that lift from winning in the league and perhaps even progressing to the third round of the Europa League qualifying, which would mean a game on the Thursday night as well. It's going to be a busy time. It's going to be a tricky time as well, because just as you can get the lift from the 3 points and turning the corner somewhat, albeit we didn't move off the foot of the Premiership table as well, which I think kind of is a stark reminder of how tight it is across, well, from fifth to down to 12th. It's, what is it? Is it 2 points that separate the teams in these positions? Is that...
Yeah, it's just three. I think we're bottom and only 3 points off fifth place. And but what you're saying is absolutely right. There's no cause for alarm if we can go, what was that, 7 league games until we got our first win, was it? And
I was actually kind of looking at St Johnstone last season. It took them till the 26th of October to get their first.
Yeah, well, this is it, and ultimately they made the top six. Granted, there was a bit of jiggery pokery in there involved, but they did that. So it's important. It's easy to get caught up in the moment, but it's a long season. A lot of twists and turns along the way, and unfortunately, well, these particular fixtures don't look particularly appealing. You never know. If we go and get another positive result, you know, it lifts them. There's a bit of confidence there from not having won in however many games. You're suddenly only looking at something like two sort of losses in something like about 6 or 7 games potentially then, if you happen to get, you know, the result in Thursday evening or whatever the case may be. And one of them is against the champions away from home. So suddenly there's the option. The opportunity there is to build a wee bit of confidence, build a wee bit more momentum in there. Another opportunity, no doubt, that the defence is going to be tested in these two league games coming up. So it's an opportunity to further bed in the rear guard and see how they cope with the test that they're given in those games. But I mean, we're having our most recent visit. We went in up to Aberdeen and won. Obviously, numerous good results up there in the last decade or two. So, you know, Motherwell getting a favourable result at Pittodrie is not an unknown quantity. Motherwell getting a result against Rangers certainly is, unfortunately. But, you know, these records are there to be broken, and hopefully that'll be the one.
Cardiff, what about the demands on the players in terms of travel here? Because, as I mentioned, you've got the trip to Northern Ireland on the Thursday, then head up north to Aberdeen for the game on the Sunday, and then the potential of a trip to either Israel or Albania the following Thursday. So this is going to be quite a demanding time for the squad, particularly in this current climate as well, where the restrictions and movement and such like could make these a bit more arduous tasks than they already were. And let's face it, trips to either Albania or Israel, I'm sure the practicalities involved in that aren't ideal right off the bat.
No, it's obviously a difficult trip, and let's hope first and foremost that we definitely have to make it. But as you're right, it's potentially three long distance or one very long distance trip within the space of 7 days or so, and that's something we are obviously not really used to in terms of normally Aberdeen or Ross County as far as we'll travel for an away match. So it adds a different element for the players in terms of they'll be on the road, and that kind of eats into your tiredness and your fatigue a little bit as well. But, you know, looking at sort of all the club's social media videos and all the sort of chat from around the club, is that we've got a fit kind of bunch of players. It's early days in the season. We're probably at the right time to be sort of loading the games, because we're maybe 7 or 8 matches into a season now, so the players are getting into their stride, and you know they're probably at the right sort of peak time in terms of their fitness to be doing something like this. But it's just part and parcel of playing in Europe, I guess, and hopefully, you know, being relatively successful and progressing through the rounds. So, you know, I don't think anyone at the club will be complaining if that's the case.
And Scott, it'll be a test of the depth of the squad as well, won't it? The really disappointing news about Liam Donnelly potentially not playing again this year. Stephen Robinson pinpointing the early stages of 2021 for Liam Donnelly's return to action. We have faced injury challenges in the early stages of the season, and this will put a bigger demand on the players that are fit, because you're going to have to really utilise the full potential of your squad. And maybe some of the guys that haven't been playing as much in these early stages could be afforded a wee bit of game time and that chance to impress.
Certainly, it's a kind of strange scenario when you think about it. When we were discussing the Ross County game about the array of midfielders, I felt as if we had multitudes of them, and now I'm not saying we're lacking in that department, but it's going to be guys like Sir Byron Maguire, Jamie Semple, who we've not seen, Dean Cornelius, maybe coming to the fold, and that might not be a bad thing. I mean, just look back to a couple of seasons ago where we had Jake Hastie, David Turnbull, and obviously we've already discussed Alan Campbell. So maybe it's this the time for these guys to come to the front, because these guys like Sir Jamie Semple that were meant to be coming through, and Jamie Semple has been talked about for years as being the kind of the next one on the conveyor belt. It's never really came to much. So I'd like to see him. I've seen him playing. Seen him playing a few times, and I've always been quite impressed. So it may be the time for somebody like that to come into the squad and try and cement his place, because this is going to be the time, as you say, it's going to be really testing. It's going to be unusual. It's going to be untested waters, with potentially going all over the place, all over Europe potentially. I suppose it's a nice problem to have, but at the end of the day, that's what the squad's there for. Barry Maguire signed a new contract. The manager must see some in him to offer him the new contract. I certainly thought that maybe that was him. His time was up. He maybe would have had to go down the leagues to work his way back up, but the manager's obviously seen something. So I certainly think that he'll be the one, the next one that'll be given the opportunity. And we know the amount of options that we've got up front. I don't know what Jordan White's injury's like. But listen, we've still got a wee bit of the transfer window. I wouldn't be surprised if we've got some up our sleeve to just bolster it up that wee bit more, particularly if we do get through the next kind of two rounds in Europe, potentially even if we get past Coleraine, I think we might see another face coming in.
Yeah, I guess it wouldn't be surprising. I think first and foremost, I would like to see the likes of Barry Maguire get that opportunity. He seems to be a player that has been afforded the odd opportunity, and then when players perhaps regarded as further up the pecking order come back into the fold, then Barry Maguire almost kind of disappears off the face. And then of course you had young Max Johnson, who was on the bench after only signing professional in the summer. It looks like if we can get away with it, we're going to look from within rather than spending money. And I guess with the uncertainty as to whether you're going to have fans back in the stadium at any point this year, there will be reduced revenue. So while a European boost or a European run will give us a great boost in terms of finances, I think it'd be remiss of us not to mention the fact that the club will be losing money from these circumstances, and also having to try and put the measures in place to ensure that we can safely continue playing football. So there's a lot of question marks for me in terms of just going out and spending money to cover for injuries. I think that Stephen Robinson was afforded a fair bit of movement when it came to bringing guys in during the close season there, albeit in different circumstances from usual. Yes, we have lost David Turnbull, Liam Donnelly to a long-term injury. We're still waiting for Jake Carroll to come back as well. But even seeing the return of Nathan McGinley on Saturday, these things are positive, and it seems like things are beginning to move in a positive direction. We'll finish on fans in the stadium, and Saturday brought a couple of test events, 300 fans in Dingwall for Ross County's game against Celtic, and the same number at Pittodrie for Aberdeen versus Kilmarnock. And you saw the big list of guidelines on the BBC website for these games. Then you saw all the fans sat by themselves in rows with their masks on. I can't have been the only one that thought, I'm quite glad I'm not there. You kind of all this time without football, and I think it'd be fantastic to be back in the stadium. But this didn't look like a very enjoyable experience, it must be said.
No, in all honesty, I didn't really. I saw the kind of list of requirements that were being made of the people that were at the games. But in all honesty, I haven't paid too much attention to what actually happened at it. I think by the fact that all of the games were on at the same time on Saturday, my focus was entirely in our game and didn't really pay too much heed to the rest, in truth. But it's one of these things. I think we're going to have to go through these kind of baby steps, and a lot of it has to be seen to smile and give the right answer and do the right thing and be seen to be doing the right thing. And you know, much that it doesn't really bear any relation, 300 people being, you know, selectively deployed across a 15,000 seater stadium or whatever it is at Pittodrie. It bears no relation to what will actually happen in kind of real life. You just need to go through it. You just need to tick the boxes, be seen that there's no incidents has occurred, then go back and report and just wait until it develops and develops and it builds up to a point where much the same as in a lot of elements in life where there's just no option but to kind of pass cross. And it's at that point there we have to do as much in terms of, you know, the mask wearing and, you know, keeping your 1 meter distance and all the rest of that comes into play, so that we start being able to build the numbers up. And it's just something we need to go through to keep the authority sweet until we get to the point where they allow us back in.
Pepe Andy mentioned there the six game Saturday, all games at 3 o'clock as well, which made for an enjoyable sports scene on Saturday night as well, it must be said, having that full quota of games, an hour and a half of coverage as well. Fair play to the BBC, because I think quite often we've criticised on this podcast the poor coverage and having to wait to the Sunday night for highlights of our game. It's a bit of a breath of fresh air having not only coverage but fairly in-depth coverage, pretty much the length of your average match of the day, actually.
It makes a difference. I mean, I remember it used to be the old days when you would be able to watch it on a Saturday night, and it is something you kind of look forward to. Maybe not when you get beat, that I can't bear to watch it again, but it certainly seems that it's improved. I can't remember the last time that we all played out at 3 o'clock on a Saturday. I mean, it must have been, it's definitely pre-Sky days anyway. But it was definitely, I didn't actually realise it was happening until I was picking my fantasy team on the Saturday that everybody was kicking off at 3. It's the way it should be, but I don't think that will happen that often.
No, Sky will be back in the fold next week, and also, obviously, with games being three teams in European action, that'll change the dynamic next weekend. But yeah, I think for all the criticism of BBC, they definitely deserve a few plaudits in regards to the increased coverage.
I mean, when you look at it on the other hand, I mean, our game needs to be changed to the Sunday, but what's the kickoff time against Rangers? Is it 12 o'clock?
12 o'clock, yeah.
That's ridiculous. You know what I mean? When you say that the enjoyment that we had at the 3 o'clock Saturday kickoffs, I suppose that's few and far between for Motherwell fans. Not that I'm feeling sorry for Old Firm fans, but it's few and far between that they actually get a 3 o'clock on a Saturday. They're usually on the TV, but it's just ridiculous, 12 o'clock kickoffs. But that's a completely different argument again.
Yeah, the TV does hold a lot of sway, there's no doubt about that, but as you say, possibly one for another time, especially because I've not had my dinner yet. But guys, thank you very much for tonight.
Cheers.
Enjoy your tea.
You've been listening to the MRC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you, goodbye. Thank you.
to the buns till they melt away. I'm looking in on the good life I might be doomed never to find. Without a trust, the flame is